Welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Calabrese, CPG advisor and now founder of It's All Happening, an agency that helps brands with launch strategy. Tune in as we break down ways that successful female entrepreneurs are using to build their businesses. You'll hear stories of the people who make shit happen, overcoming struggles and celebrating the wins. We cover how brands are taking products to market, tactics that work, things that have failed, and just lessons learned from out in the field. Whether you're looking for inspiration, industry secrets, or launching a brand, this is the place. Okay, you guys, I just hung up with Clara Venard. She is the CEO and co-founder of Coro Foods. Coro Foods, if you don't know about it, is really just this incredible premium salami brand that marries old world techniques with unexpected flavors like orange cardamom and lemongrass. Yum. So Clara has a life and a career that has honestly just taken her all over the globe. And it's no surprise because of that, that she has a super deep passion for food and ingredients. So sharing is her whole thing. It's a way of life. And whether that's through assembling like her kids' after school snack or throwing together a charcuterie board, she is all about hosting and cooking and really just creating these impressive looking spreads. So I love this conversation with Clara because we really go over like how she built this brand and how long it's taken her to build this brand and how she started off in this sandwich shop up in the Pacific Northwest, and it's grown into this like really cult-like establishment. I love this story so much. Her product is amazing. The attention to quality and sourcing is something that I think is really going to stand out. I hope you enjoy it. And without further ado, my conversation with Clara. Clara Venard, welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Danielle, for having me.
Absolutely. I am so excited to dive in to your awesome brand, Coro Foods. And before we get going, I just want to make sure everyone knows about Coro Foods. If you don't, now you do. Coro, you guys are women-owned, female-founded, premium charcuterie brand, and you're really known for your creative, vibrant, never boring flavors. I've had your product before and it's absolutely amazing. So you guys are blending super high quality ingredients and old world technique with just like really fresh, unexpected, bold flavors. Founded by moms, which I can't wait to talk about as well, because you guys wanted better for you options. Like you couldn't find what you were looking for essentially.
Yes, definitely. This is I'm a huge fan of salami, have always been. I am actually originally from Argentina. My father's Italian. And so I grew up eating salami, but
like, and high quality salami as well too. So your standards were high.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
I love that. So before we dive in, I'm going to ask you a question I ask all of my guests, but what are you currently hustling for? And it doesn't have to be work-related, personal, professional.
You know, for me, I love surrounding myself with people that I enjoy being with, and that's both in my family, my friends, at work. I can't tell you how much fun it is to make food that I love and to do it in a way that is with a group of people that I really enjoy working with. I am so happy with the team that we built at Coro. Everybody, no matter what their role is, whether they work in marketing, sales, in the plant, in shipping, it is just an amazing crew of people. And it gives me such great joy to be able to surround myself with people like that. I'm like, life is too short to surround yourself, you know, to not enjoy the people that you spend every day with.
Amen. I love that so much. So, okay, Clara, what was life like before Coro Foods? Like, what were you doing?
Well, before starting Koro Foods, I was running this deli with my longtime friend Martinique called Salumi in Pioneer Square, which is the old part of Seattle. It's beautiful, like cobblestone streets, and just really kind of, you know, it's where Seattle first grew up, and it's an amazing deli. I still run it. We make delicious sandwiches, but then also there we were making really fun salamis. I had actually inherited salumi from the previous owners, who were just like super fun, wonderful people and making really wonderful salamis. And so I was doing that while also, you know, obviously had little kids. So when I first founded Salumi, my daughters were pretty young. So it was a bit of a crazy time, you know, running a restaurant, raising a family, and I, huge cook. So just also cooking probably like 20 hours a week.
Oh my God. Welcome to my life. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I didn't realize you guys started as brick and mortar. And then people obviously like must have really loved the salami you were serving. So you decided to package it essentially.
Yes. I mean, I'd say actually there was like the moment that for me was an aha moment that we had something really special. So we were at the deli making this Mexican mole salami bake, which we're actually now is called Chipotle and Coco. We had too many people ask us why it was called mole. So we were making the what is now Chipotle and Coco salami in the deli, and it was just, I mean, I had one person tell me about how they had proposed to their future spouse over our mole.
Oh my gosh.
Our Coco and Chipotle. And another woman wrote a letter saying how she wanted to marry our Chipotle and Coco salami. And I was like, wow, that's pretty amazing.
Oh my God. That's commitment. That's like commitment to a product right there.
Yep. I was like, this time to, you know, not make this just a really time to share the love with the rest of the world.
Yeah. So when was that? When did you decide to get into the packaged charcuterie business?
So really started in 2018. Because we knew, okay, we want to do this, but in order to do that, we want to ensure that we are ready for it. And so there were a lot of things that we had to do in terms of like making sure that the product was where we wanted it, the salami, the ingredients, that we had a facility that could actually make the salami at the standards that we wanted. It didn't meet all the things that we wanted to have, like proper aging rooms and fermenting rooms and a brand that could really tell the story as well of what we were doing. The idea came out in 2018, and you know, we had to then go out and make all these changes, and we finally launched in November of 2019, right before COVID hit.
Oh, lucky you. So but did you guys build a facility or did you outsource your manufacturing?
No. So I'm very adamant about doing it all in-house. Mm. And there was one little period where we had someone slicing and packaging for us, but we've brought it all in-house. We do everything ourselves.
Okay.
And that's because I just found that was the only way that I could meet the quality I wanted, that I could meet the standards I wanted from a, you know, it's really important to me that I feel like the salami I make has the quality and food safety that I feel comfortable my kids eating it, my 90-year-old dad eating it.
Yeah.
So it could meet a much higher level of food safety than what would be the norm. And I wanted to do it in-house because it's, again, I mean, I as I mentioned in the beginning, it's really important the people that I work with and the way I treat them. And it was the one way I could ensure that I was treating everybody, no matter what their role is in the facility and in manufacturing, at the way that I wanted. So I felt like doing it in-house was the only way I could do that.
Okay. So I need to hear more. Setting up a meat manufacturing facility, did you have the expertise and experience to do that? Or did you have to bring in consultants to help build?
I didn't bring in consultants, but I did have a lot of people. I mean, it is a team effort always. We had one person that had run a meat plant before that joined and worked with us for 2 years before designing the plant, making sure it had everything we needed. We have a person on our team who's even actually like a meat scientist.
Nice.
You know, preeminent meat scientist in this space. And so he was a huge, like, when it came to like deciding, okay, what aging rooms? I mean, we got to buy them from Europe. Which ones are the ones that we need to buy that are better? What are the pros and cons? He was instrumental in those decisions. Or someone else who's been amazing, who's basically like a granddad to me, and he's been working with me for years still does. I mean, they all do actually still work with us. He was also had run many plants for 30 years. And so, yeah, it was, to be honest, it's a team effort. So there were no consultants, but there was just a lot of people on our team that helped us.
But a lot of people who were consulting you. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. No formal consultants. Got it. So, okay, that build took about a year and a half, yes, then. Is that right?
That's correct.
And how big was the facility? And is it the same facility that you're in now? Have you expanded?
It was pretty much, it was 15,000 square feet. We have since added 5,000 more square feet. And it's really sort of designed to grow.
So, is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I don't want space to be a constraint.
So to get that going, to get the manufacturing going, did you take out loans? Did you bring in investment? Did you bootstrap? Was the deli business so profitable that you were able to build it yourself?
Yeah, all of the above. I mean, the deli definitely was a huge help, especially before COVID. You know, I did have to bring on investors. There was, you know, had to use debt. We now have a fully automated line that does all of our slicing and packaging. So we can, you know, basically produce 1,000 packages an hour. I mean, it's pretty amazing. You know, so there've been leases. I mean, you pretty much end up doing a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I have an amazing team and that works with me and who I feel like are able to, you know, if there are little things we have to do, we're even doing them ourselves sometimes.
Yeah.
Like doing little, you know, have to pull down walls and put in new walls. Well, we'll do it ourselves. So there's a bit of, you end up doing a little bit of everything.
Yeah. But I imagine because you had your brick and mortar that you've established this customer base of an engaged audience where people really wanted your product. You've obviously gotten all these love letters from customers. So raising money and bringing in outside people and building a facility probably wasn't the standard of like, I'm starting a brand from scratch, right? You had an established brand.
We had an established brand. In fact, the deli is so well known in Seattle, and that was a huge help. That it actually was, there's a whole Anthony Bourdain episode on it.
Oh, no way. Oh my gosh.
Anthony Bourdain's top 10 restaurants in the world. It's one of the ones that's always listed. So yes, that was a huge help to be able to like that track record. And we just had such a fan base already. And so those people were able to really, so, you know, the support we had when it came even to building the facility, even going to the bank, frankly, and trying to get a loan, like, mm-hmm, talking about a Seattle institution, it was super helpful.
Yeah. See, this is such a great example of like when, you know, restaurant can scale past one location. It's like your launch pad to test your products, build your audience, your credibility. And then it's like you figure out like you've got this one really special thing that people are obsessed with and like you package it. And
yes.
I'm actually talking to somebody about doing this, a restaurateur in LA, this a similar situation, though he wants to start a condiment company, but he has a very established restaurant here in LA that has like a huge audience.
Yes, I can't tell you enough how even getting into your first grocery stores. I mean, we launched the brand in November and we already had a couple of grocery stores lined up of the like, you know, in Seattle, mm-hmm, very well-known like Metropolitan Market and PCC Community Markets, you know, and it's because of that restaurant history that immediately gave us the entry point. And then the restaurant, to your point, was very helpful. As I mean, you don't just open up a plant day one and it works Right. The way you meant to.
No. Yeah.
And I mean, one of the blessings of COVID was we were forced to really like take it, you know, pretty slow for those that first year or two. But the restaurant was always a great way to a great feedback loop. Like we could make product, we could take to the restaurant would come call back and be like, hey, you guys need to tweak this and make these adjustments. And so it was I think really helpful for our whole R&D process to ensure that we ultimately ended up with the product with the quality that we wanted.
At that point, like when you started to build the plant, you probably had to spend more of your time and focus on Coral Foods and the plant, but like you were also running the restaurant. So how do you balance that? These days I'm in the restaurant and these days I'm focused on, you know, the package brand.
Two things. One is definitely there was a day of the week that I was going to the deli.
Yeah.
To the restaurant, you know, and dedicating myself to that. I'm a big believer in sort of having blocks of time that you really just fully immerse yourself into one thing. You can't really think about it if you're doing an hour here and an hour there. Like, it's better just to say, Tuesdays is my day that I am just going to think about the restaurant.
Yeah.
And so that was definitely something I did. The other thing was having the team of people. Like,
yeah,
I've been really lucky.
People that you trust and are quality, totally.
Really great, great. Wonderful people that help me run the day-to-day of the restaurant and who are all, they're actually, they've always left it. One of them called themselves the fine dining dropouts. So, you know, and I've been able to really learn from them. They've been wonderful. So I am grateful to every single person that has helped me with the restaurant. That's also helpful because, of course, I can't spend every day, and a restaurant does need coverage 7 days a week.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, you started to get Coral off the ground, and you guys are based out of Pac Northwest, the Seattle area. How long did you stay? Imagine you started regional, like you mentioned, you know, PCC, Met Market. How long did you stay regional before you started to sell the packaged charcuterie outside of Pac Northwest?
I'd say the real expansion outside the Pac Northwest started happening last year. So in 2024, we dabbled a little bit. I mean, we had some super early customers like DeBruno Brothers in Philadelphia as an example, really early on. We've dabbled a little bit before that. But I'd say when we really said, okay, now we are growing outside the Northwest and we are going to dedicate the time and the resources and the energy and we are ready for it, was in 2024.
And what were those unlocks? Like, what were those things that you as the founder needed to see in place before you were like, we can do this? Like, what was it?
The two things that come to mind is one is having a product and a plant that was making something, you know, the food at the quality, the level, the consistency on a day-to-day basis every single day in the way that I wanted. So the big, I think, unlock ultimately was I knew that we needed to launch a line of sliced salami. Like that's where the market is and that's what consumers like to eat. And I actually even like to eat our sliced product because it's so thin that you can really get the flavors and it's not so much, you know, I think it's a better mouthfeel than just chewing like a big cut of salami. So I really like the sliced salami. And so I felt like we needed to have that before we really expanded. And we didn't launch that line until middle of 2023. So yeah, March to June was when we launched the sliced line. And so it was in market in the Northwest for a period of time. And then we were, you know, for 6 months or something. And then we felt like we were ready to expand. So that was one big thing, was knowing that I could make the product I wanted and that I really felt like had potential. The other thing was being able to really prove the concept in the Northwest and even just know, okay, what does it take to succeed in grocery store with this product? What should we be doing? What works? What doesn't? And there's a lot of innovation and testing that you have to do. And to be, you know, and our, frankly, we've had amazing partners in the Northwest. I love, so, you know, I know these, so many of the teams at these various grocery stores, I know them so well at this point, and they've been just wonderful, even helping us, oh, should we be in this section of the store or the other? And then they do tests for us. So all that testing and proof of concept and feedback. And once we felt like, okay, we've really nailed it. We've got the product we not want. We know where it needs to go. We know how to merchandise it. And look, we can show you it actually turns really quickly.
Yeah.
Now we can go outside and say, yeah, there's something here. And other regions start
to pay attention. Yeah. Who are some of the retailers that you have been like launching with since 2023 or 2024 outside of Pac Northwest?
Yeah, we've been growing. It's been a little crazy.
Really?
Very exciting. We're growing much faster than I ever expected. So many big and small partners that have been wonderful throughout this process. But, you know, one of the ones that I have to call out is actually Kroger has been an amazing partner for us. They've been just very willing. They've expanded us multiple regions and are now actually taking us national. And they've been, I feel like, really understand the category. They have the Murray stores. And so it's a good, they've done a great job. Other ones that have, Fresh Thyme has been another amazing one. I mean, I just love it also when I meet, you know, buyers that are just personally, they love the flavors. And so they get so excited. So they've been a wonderful, I'm so grateful to all the national co-op grocers and interesters, all these stores all across the country that I can never touch. And I wish I could go and tell them the story and, you know, give them some samples. And yet they've been so supportive. And I'm always amazed to go to, like, I hear people go to, you know, some co-op that I never even, you know, I've never
heard of, and they have your product.
There's like a whole line of Coro. And so they've been amazing, silently amazing.
Yeah, that's cool. That must be really cool to, like, your product is just like organically getting out there and people, they're scooping up the whole line. And
yeah, that has been really cool. And I'm very grateful to them.
Hey, founders, are you sick of throwing stuff at a wall and hoping it sticks? I see so many brands launch unprofitable products and they wonder why they can never get ahead and figure out how to build a sustainable CPG business. Are you ready to stop guessing and start profiting from day one? Introducing My Profit Plan. It's a 90-minute audit that slices through the noise with real tactical clarity on your specific brand and cost of goods. I'm Danielle, a CPG operator who's launched 30 plus brands, generated over $50 million in sales, and I'm handing you the playbook. No fluff, no theory, just profit, margin, and scale mapped out for your brand, and I only take on 10 spots a month. So stop spinning and start scaling the smart way. Trust me, you will not regret this. Book your profit plan at the link in the show notes and go from almost ready to ready for shelf and sustainability and profitability. So natural, obviously, from what you're telling me, natural specialty has been like the backbone of your channel strategy.
Yes, it has been. And
conventional though too, because you're talking about Kroger.
Well, that's what is a little surprising to us is that we do really well. I mean, we actually first really started in natural, like in California, you know, so like Lazy Acres.
Yeah.
Leaf and so those are the backbone of what we've always grown with. I've been amazed to see just how much also support we end up getting in these sort of nice, I mean, there's some
higher end conventional,
stores who've also really a good job.
Yeah. The higher end conventionals, it sounds like too, that skew sort of like specialty. Yeah. Like Mariano's. Like, are you guys carried at Mariano's?
Not yet.
Well, you will be if Kroger's taking you national, right?
Oh, actually, and they do carry some of our SKUs right now. So yes.
Yeah. And did you guys set up with UNFI and KeHE early on too? Has that been, have they been a part of your expansion?
They have. KeHE, yes, both have been. The interesting thing about this category is there's also some very strong regional and
special. Regional, yeah.
years. So I got to give a shout out to Peterson Cheese in the Northwest. They've been amazing. So we sell, you know, to a number of retailers through them, and they're, you know, family run and just have been great. They were the first distributor that we worked with. But since then, yeah, we're now with Kehi, with UNFI, Tony's Fine Food, which is a subsidiary of Kehi. Of Unify, excuse me. And then also Gourmet Food International is really big in this category. And so we've been working a lot with them as well, especially as we go into the East Coast. So doing a lot with them as well.
Yeah. Okay. So you've kind of like tag teamed it with like the larger broadliners and also the regional specialty. Are you doing any food service as well too? Do you guys do food service distributor?
Oh, actually, yes. I mean, everybody eats salami.
Yeah.
So we do food service. Our core focus has always been very much on the retail side. Just because we're small and we can only focus on so much, but we do have a pretty good, we do work with Chef's Warehouse as an example.
Yeah.
And there are some of our core customers are, it's an interesting mix. There's a lot of pizza chains because we have a really delicious pepperoni.
Nice.
And so we've done a lot of business with multi-chain, higher end pizza chains across the West Coast. Also delis,
sandwiches. Yeah.
And then also fine dining and a lot of, catering and hotels. And I'm always surprised, like I'll hear of some, the Kimpton in LA. And
using your product. And
yes.
Yeah, it really is versatile, isn't it? You know, like it's such a, like everybody eats salami, and I think your interesting flavors like must really make your brand stand out, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Interesting flavors, and then also this like focus on all natural.
Which is hard to find with salami, right? With the bigger brands that you see at like the mainstream grocery stores, like, you know what I mean? There is if you turn that package over and look at the label, it's like, ew.
Yes. Yeah. And that was one of the things before we launched Coro that, that we were adamant about, is we wanted it to be very sort of simple ingredients, not ultra processed. So there's no corn. We don't use corn syrup. We don't use dextrose. We don't use any fillers. We don't use any artificial preservatives. We don't. We don't use any like even milk solids. So it's very much, we use sea salt, we're using spices. And
so as you've continued to expand, Clara, have you guys been able to fund the business yourselves, or have you continued to raise capital to help expand and grow?
We do a lot of self-funding. I think sometimes as we grow and try to push more in marketing, we do sometimes raise some money so that we can invest on the,
the marketing side.
I mean, I am very adamant. We're not just, we're building a brand that you can trust, that that we're making the right choices with the food. We're making the right choices for the community, and we're making the right choice. So we really want to be a trustworthy brand, and being able to tell that story and publicize it and take some money.
So what does the future, like what are your long-term plans? Do you have a vision of where you guys want to be in 5, 10, 15 years? Do you want to hold the company? It sounds like you're very into like the sustainable food system, which I think is so cool. I love that personally. Are you looking towards acquisition? Like how do you see Coro evolving?
Oh my gosh, we just have so much. We have so much to grow. there's a lot of growth. I mean, that's one of the exciting things about. One of the many exciting things about what we're doing at Coro is just how much growth opportunity we have, and so many more. So much more to do. I feel like we are just reaching the surface. So we are really. I'm really focused on doing that.
Yeah.
Continuing to pursue, continuing to grow Coro. I feel like this is a category that is just ripe for disruption. And so I want to kind of be the disruptor.
And how much are you looking like as the CEO of the company? towards top line revenue versus profitability? Are you more focused on one or the other, or are you like trying to find that perfect marriage between the two? How are you viewing your growth financially?
Oh, it's both. I mean, I'm very much into the numbers as well. So I think, yeah, you can't just grow
top line without the, yeah,
you know, with no eye to profitability. And so I really like, I know, I mean, at this point, we know our cost structure to cents, you know,
good.
We're very much on top of it. And, you know, so yes, I want to grow revenue, but I want to do it in a way that's cost effective as well.
Right. Sustainable. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sustainable, not in a way that you have to like continually just raise and raise and raise.
So I feel like I'm a proponent. Yeah, you can raise if you're like, oh, I'm going to do a big marketing push. And it's something incremental, additional, not necessarily that would be on an ongoing basis. Yes, maybe that's something to raise money for. But the day-to-day function of the business and how we...
You want it to be self-sustaining. You know,
yes, that should be sustaining.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree. And I love founders that have that mindset. Okay, but Claire, what has it been like for you as a woman jumping into CPG, right? So like you were in hospitality, food service restaurant before this. You jumped into this world of like sales, distribution, regulations. You know, how have you navigated the male dominance of it all? Like, what has it been like for you as a woman?
Definitely the meat world is pretty male.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
You know, and I think for... I don't know how other people perceive it. And I frankly, I'm sort of like, I don't really try to bother too much with that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know what I do. I know.
You're doing you. You're doing your business.
Yeah. And I'm like, I just got to execute well. And I need to be doing, you know, setting my goals and knowing that I'm meeting my own goals and that the team's meeting the goals and that I have a great team of people that I work with. And so whether how others perceive that, I try not.
You don't give a shit is what you're saying, Clara.
Yes, I don't give a shit.
You don't give a shit. And I love that. Yeah. Good for you. So what are you excited about right now in the business? Like, do you guys have new flavors coming out? Are you launching new retailers, marketing campaigns? Like,
oh yeah, so we are actually doing a collab that we're just about to launch as we speak when this is running, and it's a chimichurri flavor. I'm super excited about that. We're always tasting new flavors and have a pipeline of new flavor ideas. And I love that process. I think it's so fun that, you know, once you remove the boundaries of what people typically think are the salami flavors, there's just a lot of fun.
Okay, but wait, can we talk about the collab, since by the time this airs, it's going to be out? So can you tell us about the collab?
Yeah. So the collab was with Gabby Dalkin, who's amazing. Just, you know, and it's amazing because she's such a similar, I feel like, vibe to us. Just very much trying to do, leading similar lives and trying to do similar things. And so I'm very excited to partner with her. And so we got together and did a bunch of flavor testing, tried a lot of different things using her because she makes her own spices that are delicious.
Yeah.
We combined that with our salami, which she loves, and, you know, tested a bunch of different flavors. And after a number of iterations, we decided to focus on the chimichurri. And it is so delicious. It's also very fun for me personally because I'm originally from Argentina, and chimichurri is something that we eat, that I use all the time, that we eat a lot in Argentina. I grew up eating chimichurri, so to now see it in our shared salami is really fun. And
is it going to be in retail?
It's going to be available online primarily.
Okay.
So it's available on CoroFoods.com. And then also, I know Gabby will also be selling it.
On her website as well. Okay, yes. Exciting. Can't wait for that collab. Need to try it. Okay, so are you doing collabs like on the regular? Is that part of your marketing strategy? Or this is just like a one-time kind of fun project?
Yeah, we are big fans of collabs. We haven't done them as we've sort of dabbled in them a little bit, but it's definitely something that we enjoy doing. And I think in particular, because we love to innovate on flavor, it's just really fun to do them with others. And so we're looking, we will be doing more. We're super careful about, we care a lot about the flavors that we launch. I always say it's got to have the Koro wow. If not, it doesn't meet that bar, then I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So we take a long time to do a collab. So, it takes us 6 months, 9 months. We are iterating, testing, age, and, we got to age it all the time. Every time we make a new batch, we're aging it. So we take it pretty slow, but we will be having more collabs. So
yeah.
Kind of keep, when it's ready, we will launch it and keep our eyes open for it.
So what sage advice would you give to a founder just starting out today?
I'm going to give two pieces of advice, one a little more work-wise, one a little more personal. On the work front, I'd say so important to focus, know what you care about, drown out the noise, and just focus on the few things that you really care about and make sure you're doing those well. Mm-hmm. There's one of the hardest things as a founder, as an entrepreneur, is there's so much you could do that it can be completely overwhelming, and you could you could end up feeling like you're trying to do it all and not doing any of it well. So it's very important to sort of figure out what are the things that are the priorities, what are the things that matter the most, and just really focus on doing those well. Try to drown out the noise and even what other people think, drown that out. You know what's important.
Yeah.
My personal advice is also, set some boundaries, make time for yourself, because it can be all consuming. Mm-hmm. I have found myself, going on a family camping trip and I'm on the side on my computer trying to work. It can be, set boundaries, make time for yourself. That's going to give you the balance and allow you to come back to work in a better place.
To continue on. Yeah.
Continue on and enjoy it without wearing, otherwise all you'll do is work. and I think one thing I'll add to that is as a mom, I'm always grateful for my kids and my family because they force that on me. They do need attention. And so they force me to turn off and go make dinner and make sure they're getting what they need. And I'm grateful because even though, yes, it's always a lot to be a parent and with kids and a business. But on the flip side, I feel like having those kids have served throughout the process of growing Koro have served as my forcing function to make time for something other than work.
Yeah, totally. Keeping your priorities straight on what really matters at the end of the day. So yes, thank you for that. So Claire, where can everybody find Koro? Sounds like pretty much anywhere. Anywhere you can find Koro. So
if you go on korofoods.com, you can definitely buy Koro. And we also have a grocery finder, so you can find
store locators. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
But otherwise, so I would encourage you. We're always adding new grocery stores. We're growing a ton right now. Obviously we're in most places, pretty much everywhere in the Northwest. And once you leave the Northwest, adding a lot of locations and stores and shops, and we do our best to keep everything on our website. So I think that's the best place to go and find us.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for sharing all your insights. It was great to hear your story. If you guys haven't heard of Koro, you absolutely have to check them out. The product is amazing. Thank you so much, Clara.
Thank you so much, Danielle. It's been really fun. I appreciate it.
Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. It would mean so much to me if you like, subscribe, or share this episode with anyone who you think needs to hear. And if you're launching a brand and you need a CPG strategy advisor, visit my website to check out what we have to offer. I host free workshops from time to time. You have to sign up for emails to hear about those. And you can join Launch Lab, which is our group cohort that teaches you the four critical phases of launching your CPG brand and how to actually execute your launch quickly. We also do one-on-one advising. So if you book a profit plan session, I will assess your product profitability and recommend a package that works for you. You can book a call at itsallhappeningagency.co. You can email us at hi@itsallhappeningagency.co and follow us on Instagram at itsallhappeningco. See you soon.